When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
All right, hello. This is I Should Be Writing number 522, I believe. I'm still working on the filters here. I look a little transparent. That's not ideal. Talk amongst yourselves. Nope, still transparent. It was looking good yesterday. What changed? Did I change? I don't know. Oh well. You're going to have to take the little bit of a square or transparent mirror. So, I'm going to go with the square. I am. Oh, we have people. Hello, OK Cunning, K Kimmy, Cliff Bird, Ghost Mirror, yes. Under Pope. Fall is here, Halloween is coming. You're right. I should go with the more spooky, transparent kind of mirror. I was all ready to set up the stream and then decided to let the dog in because she wanted to be in here with me, and then she's got something over there and she's playing with it, and it's not something I gave her, so I had to take it away from her. It's a little piece of plastic. It was the dog equivalent of, hey, look, Mom, pay attention to me, and so I kicked her out. Sad dog thing. Hey, Kimmy, I'm working on a Halloween journal right now, actually. That sounds cool. I like the idea of that. That's the books you make, right? I think that's what you do. I'm trying to remember from yesterday. Apologize if I'm wrong. I'm wrong a lot. I'm trying to find... Ah! I decided to buy the Elgato Stream Deck. I am not supported or endorsed. No. I'm not sponsored, that's the word, by Elgato. I just, bought the Stream Deck, and then decided since I'm just a baby streamer to start out with the little one. And already I'm seeing the use of the larger one. And I don't even do that much, compared to most. Yes, okay. I would love to see the Halloween journal when you're done, actually. So, it's a low day for me. I'll just be honest with you. I woke up with a migraine, and so took some migraine meds, and so the morning was like a mix of being kind of logy from the drugs and just kind of depressed overall. And I'm perking up from the drugs now. Still not great on the mood, but I'm here to talk about writing. And one thing we talk about in this show is how to handle when your mood is not quite on board with everything else you want to do. Oh, look, I thought I fixed Nightbot. I failed. Did not fix Nightbot. So Nightbot is apparently copying Streamlabs? I don't even know. So, what I've been up to, I started work on the secret project I keep alluding to, and now I'm starting to feel kind of weird about it because I feel like I'm talking about it more than I'm working on it, and that's always bad. So, I think I need to work on getting something tangible to perhaps work on and perhaps announce. But I worked on that this Saturday, and I finished the first installment, chapter, episode, whatever you want to call it. And after that, let's see, what did I do yesterday? I recorded Ditch Diggers with Matt and Andrea Phillips, and I did my AMA stream, which was a lot longer than usual and lots of fun. I think it was because I mentioned Blazeball on Twitter, and so I got Blazeball fans showing up wanting to talk about Blazeball. Which I'm still playing with a stream idea about. Last night I came up with a whole bunch of announcer names. Like, every episode I'm going to have a different announcer name. That was fun. My favorite one is Gate Crashing Parasite, but that is directly stolen from a John Linnell song. John Linnell of They Might Be Giants did a solo album based on states when they really have nothing to do with the actual state. They're just songs that happen to be about one thing and mention a state in the along with it. So, yes, that's where Charming Witty Drunk and Gate Crashing Parasite comes from, the song New Hampshire by John Linnell. I won't sing it for you because of all the dangers of doing that. And you don't want to hear me sing, trust me. But, first, I think I've been trying to ignore various things in the news lately. Not ignore, just not feeling ready to deal with them. But I still know they're going on, and I think that's what's grinding me down, depression-wise. And talked to my husband about it just before streaming, and what's funny is I had just said the same thing to him about writing projects, where, well, I'll tell you about that in a minute, because it's actually about writing, so we'll continue the show. But, you know, he said, all I'm trying to do is think about what I can do. The stuff that's in my control, I'll work on that. Stuff that's out of my control is out of my control. Which is actually what I've been trying to do with writing. I mentioned a while back that I was eager to join the 24-hour plays project, and I wrote out a intro to me because I didn't know how to submit anything, so I just got the contact information from my friend Dan Coyce and emailed the guy. And that was the hard part. And I never heard back from him, but I'm okay because I did my part. I reached out. Now, maybe if someone out there is in marketing and thinking I should follow up, maybe. But I gotta say that overactive PR people really get under my skin. So I don't like doing that to anybody. And I submitted another little thing for a project and just heard positive news this morning. So, and that was another thing that I had done, like, I did my part. I did my submission and I got good news. So that was kind of cool. But I keep trying to remember what is in my control. What is in my control is the content I put out or the submissions or the queries I put out. Whether anybody wants to publish it, wants to buy it, wants to tune in on Twitch, wants to subscribe to the podcast, that's all on them. I just gotta keep doing what I'm trying to do, which is just make a lot of weird stuff. That's me. But, trying to remember the making the weird stuff. So we do have a couple of questions from the Discord, and the first one is actually the person who requested it asked for us to talk about it on Ditch Diggers, and I will bring it up to Matt. But the good news is Matt and I are actually well ahead of our recording schedule for once, and we have stuff recorded into, well, I guess we've got a show this Friday and a show next Friday. So the next show won't happen until, like, the 9th, I guess, of October. And I don't want you to wait that long to hear my thoughts, because I've got thoughts. So I will bring it up to Matt if you want to hear Ditch Diggers talk about it instead of I Should Be Writing. Fast forward a little bit. If you're listening to this on RSS. If you're listening to it on live, maybe just go check out, I don't know, what's happening on Twitter. Oh, don't look on Twitter. Don't look. don't see. I don't even want to see what's happening on Twitter. I don't know what's happening on Twitter. Excuse me. But first question is, someone pointed me towards the agent Laura Bradford lamenting a missed opportunity in PitMad, and how she was lamenting a missed opportunity, a project she was falling in love with, got picked up by another agent. And he says, while I'm empathetic, it's kind of hard to feel sorry for. It's like someone complaining about not being able to eat their caviar because it's too salty. I'm sure there must be caviar problems. So I read the thread, and I understand that from our point of view, the agents have all the power. But, and it almost feels like even though we're the bosses, we're applying for jobs when we query them. And that's mainly because of all these bosses, there are only a certain amount of employees who want to work with us. So, or representatives, whatever. Client, representative, boss sounds a little wrong, but it feels like that. It feels like we're applying for a job, but really they need to sign us. We're the client. And that is a different power dynamic, but it's also, I use this metaphor a lot. It's a lot like a marriage because it often takes a long time to find the right one. You can think it's right, and then after a little while realize it's all wrong. And you're only supposed to be with one at a time. Polyamory aside. I don't think there's polyamory in agenting. Caviar, hashtag caviar probs. Thank you. Oh, hey, Annie. So I would love Annie's chiming in on this, talking about caviar problems and agents. While it does sound like caviar probs, as we are looking for the right agent to rep our stuff, they're looking for the right author to sell to make them money. And to you know, partner with to create a career. So agents aren't going to have caviar until they sign the author that will, whose deal will pay for the caviar. So think about it like that. We're crushed when we query a bunch of agents and we don't get anybody interested. They're crushed when they make an offer or try to get offer representation, but a lot of people are offering representation and they don't get chosen. It's kind of the same thing. It's just the power dynamic. I joked about this on Stardew Valley and when I was a dating person in the 90s, and Cure for Death says, the point about agents makes perfect sense. They're not our bosses or our employees. Yes. It's a business agreement. Relationship. Yes. So in Stardew Valley, when there's a spring dance every year, and since the game starts in the spring, no matter how hard you work, you can only get to a certain level of relationship with every eligible person in the thing. So you go to the spring dance and you walk around and you talk to people, and most of the people there are whining about not having the nerve to ask somebody to dance or finding somebody to dance with. And then when you offer to dance with them, they're like, nope, thanks, maybe next time. I'm gonna ask someone else, busy, sorry, awkward. And that's kind of how it feels like when you're an author who's dying for representation and an agent's upset online about losing an author to another agent. But it's possible the agent was not right for you. Just because they want to get up the nerve to ask somebody to dance doesn't mean they want to dance with you, and that sucks. But do you really want somebody who doesn't want to dance with you? I don't. It's and I accepted. Believe me, remember, I've been around the block Whoa, flashback to high school dances. Yes, sorry, Underpope. Been around the block with a lot of agents, some of whom I wondered if they were really interested in me. And it turns out they weren't. What was going on in their heads when they signed me is anybody's guess. But I had reservations and went with it anyway because we're supposed to be excited when an agent is interested in us. And I regretted it. I don't know where my career would be if I had managed to find the right agent earlier. Although, I got together with my current and awesome agent, I think fairly early in her career, so I don't know how much earlier I could have gotten her. But that's neither here nor there. It can be bitter having people be sad that they don't have X, and you think, I have X, why don't you want me? But it's gotta be a relationship that clicks on both ends, and that's where the truth is, and that's where it sucks. Perhaps the agent could have, I don't know, putting it out on Twitter does, because of the power dynamic, usually agents are the ones with the power, perhaps they could have been a little more understanding of who they're talking to. Because I know that I read the responses, and there were a couple of responses going, hey, I'm here, hey, check me out. But, yeah, that it does sound like a, you know, when you're incredibly wealthy and your wallet's just splitting at the seams because of your money, that's a problem you want to talk about with other people whose wallets are splitting because of the money in them, not, say, the internet. So it perhaps was a little tone deaf, considering how many prospective hopeful clients or wannabe authors or whatever you want to call them are following her. But it's a real problem. They have to find the right fit too. And sometimes they find what they think is the right fit and that person wants to go with another agent. And that's an ego hit no matter how you tell it. So, yeah, that's that. Matt might have other input, so I'll bring it up to him and we'll talk about it in about 2 weeks. Let's see. Productivity book recommendations, like Atomic Habits, which I mentioned. Let's see. I got a lot out of Atomic Habits. I'm currently reading the Pumpkin one, but that's more of an entrepreneurial thing, so I'm not quite sure how that fits. I'm trying to read it as an author, as a person who does a lot of different creative things, not as specifically an author. So I don't know if it fits, but I will look for it. Yeah, Underpope, go ahead and mention another podcast. That's great. I am not requiring you only listen to I Should Be Writing. That is silly. So go ahead and recommend that. I don't know if you'll be able to post a link, but you can say, post the podcast name or say .com or something. Pumpkin Business, that's pumping. Pumpkin Business Book. Everybody listen to Underpope right now. Ah, the Pumpkin Plan, yeah. It's a strategy to grow a business. That's what I'm listening to right now. It's a little entrepreneur bro. Okay, it's a lot entrepreneur bro, but I'm trying to gain what I can from it. Oh, well, yeah, the Productivity Alchemy podcast, that's done by a good friend of mine, so of course you can talk about that. Yes, Kevin Sunny does the Productivity Alchemy podcast, and I believe Ursula Vernon, his wife, shows up on it from time to time. I am very behind on all my podcast listening. I neglect all of my podcasts equally, so please don't blame me for not being up on that when they're dear friends of mine. Fluffy Yeti said it's an excellent podcast. Yes, I have been on it, so I know that Kevin is always looking for different opportunities to talk to people. And the funny thing is that a lot of what he does is gets people on, and, you know, I'm like, Kevin, I am not productive. I struggle all the time. And he's like, that's what the show's about. You struggle, but you still manage to build a writing career and a podcast career. So let's talk about that. So I got on and talked about the things I struggled with, but how I managed to still write books and make podcasts and stuff. So Productivity Alchemy, Pumpkin Plan, if you're interested in a more entrepreneurial look. Atomic Habits. I tried the 5-second rule and I got kind of balk at it. I don't know why. The 5-second rule is if there's something you don't want to do, you give yourself 5 seconds and then you do it. Because apparently after 5 seconds, like, it goes into brain chemistry. After 5 seconds, you can put up the walls to resist. But now that I know I'm doing the 5-second thing, I'll put up the walls immediately. I'm like, no, I'm not counting down for 5 seconds. I can stand your 5 seconds. And I've got a really, really obstinate 6-year-old in my head. It's just a pain in the ass. So yeah, that's not useful. But, see, it's really hard because I've read several, and the problem is, I think, I need to actually approach it like a textbook. Because, like, I'll be listening in the car and think, oh, that sounds really smart, okay, and then I'll go home, and then I'll cook dinner, and then I'll watch a mystery, and then I'll play a video game, and then I'll go to bed, and then I'll wake up in the morning and do everything I was doing before, and we'll forget the cool thing I just heard in the car. Until I get back in the car and turn it back on, I'm like, oh, that's right, they were talking about how not to get in this rut. And so that was, I think, actually sitting down and studying a productivity book and maybe making some notes and seeing how I can insert those notes into my day-to-day would be a better way of approaching this. Unfortunately, I'm listening to it in the car or while I do, you know, housework or something else I don't need my brain for, because I'm distracted and overworked, and not even overworked, just unable to focus very often. And so if I just sit down to listen to an audiobook or read a productivity book with my notebook, I'm not sure how far I'll get. ADD probs. Sometimes I find it easier to do something I don't want to do after I allow myself to say I don't wanna. That is a really good point, Kay Kimmy. I think sometimes, maybe I should write this book. It sounds so ridiculous, but hopefully there are enough geeks in the audience to relate. Sometimes I LARP a responsible person. Instead of, you know, saying, can I do this? I think, what would a responsible person do? Oh, yeah, they do the dishes before settling down with a glass of wine. Okay, I'll do what the responsible person would do. I was watching a rerun of Schitt's Creek the other night, and people were, the mother was on the town council, and everyone was praising her and how she addressed everything. And she's like, oh, I merely channeled someone who cared. And, while, you know, cold and harsh the way she is, sometimes LARPing somebody who, maybe I'll LARP a responsible mother. Maybe I'll LARP somebody who's confident. That might be the life hack you need. I really love 7 Habits, but that was over 20 years ago. Was that 7 Habits of Highly Effective People? I think I read that one recently, and I might have written stuff down, but my notebook is downstairs. I think a lot of these books have a lot of the same messages. A lot of it is don't spend your time blaming somebody else. That's a big one, I think. The problem I have with it is that a lot of these, especially the hardcore dude bro white guy books, they're always just like, I want to tell you, stop whining and just go do it, just deal with it. They're the kind of guys who would absolutely reject the idea that by birth, some people have it easier than others. And while marginalized people have more to overcome to get noticed in several fields, so just quitting whining and going ahead and doing it is not the best advice. Looking seriously at your problems and seeing what you can't take responsibility for, what you have control over, like I said earlier, is a good way of going about it. Fluff Yeti says, I use Habitica when there's anything I find myself avoiding even slightly. I'll go ahead and add it to the to-do list so I don't avoid to the point of forgetting. Under Pope Seconds Habitica. I hit a wall with Habitica. And it's embarrassing, but I was using it back when it was Habit RPG. And once I unlocked all of the pets, I stopped caring. And again, this is not like me going, well, I don't care anymore. It's just like, you know, you realize you stop caring when you stop logging in every day and you stop remembering to log your things. So that was me, and I played it for years to unlock all of the unlockables. So it's an RPG type thing where you gain experience points for doing things, but you also get loot such as weird eggs. And the eggs hatch into different colors of pets. And sometimes you'll have quests to go on where you get unique pets. But there's like a core set of 10 pets and a core and like 10 colors or something that you can unlock. So there's a lot of things to collect. And but once I hit like all of that, I'm just like, I tried to reset. Because you can do that. You can like I reached 100, 101, level 102, and I tried to reset and I still wasn't terribly interested in it. So, funnily enough, their loot system broke me for Habitica. I still love it. I think it's amazing. I just can't get it in my head to make it a priority. Stop whining and use your trust fund money. Yeah, that's what I hear. Primalina, good to see you. And Taylor M56, ADHD, people just need their brains tricked and they can do anything. I am beginning to believe that's right. Yeah. It's a weird thing. But yeah, stop wanting and use your trust fund money. This woman is a self-made millionaire at 26 and started with a house that was already paid for and a $300,000 trust fund. Wow, magic. Okay, Kimmy, my problem is my brain is too smart and knows it's a trick. Yeah, that's my problem with the 5-second rule. I'm just like, no, you can't trick me with your 5 seconds. No. No. I think it was the Now Habit. That might be a good one. I think that was the one that had you be mindful of every decision you make instead of, you know, falling into a rut. You say, I am going to eat this cookie now at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 hours before dinner. I'm going to have a second glass of wine at 10 o'clock when I know it may hurt me in the morning. I am choosing to watch this television instead of do yoga. And it doesn't say any of those things are bad, but when you mindfully say, this is a choice I am making, you will look at your choices a little closer. I think that was the Now Habit, but that was the one thing that really stood out to me. It's like, if you say, I'm going to sit and play 4 hours of video games, that's fine, but you are making that decision. You don't just fall into it. More chatting. Cure for Death, I am not personally a fan of gamifying things, but as a self-employed person, I have ADHD, so a little bit of structure goes a long way around here. Yeah. It's hard to, sometimes it's hard to find the trick, the one weird trick, as much as I hate that phrase. the bullet journal apparently works for a lot of ADHD people, and if you look for bullet journal and ADHD on YouTube, you may find useful videos instead of the incredibly vastly irritating artistic videos. And I'll admit it, it's jealousy. Part of it is me just going, look, I can't write that pretty. I love buying blank books, and then when I put my horrible handwriting into them, I feel like I sully them. And when I watch you make your beautiful June layout, I was watching one that's like, help me do my June layout. I'm like, great, show me how you set up all of your things, because I know a lot of people have different specific ways of doing their bullet journal, and I wanted to learn about that. But no, I got to watch her play with stencils and gold leaf marker for 26 minutes. I did not watch the full 26-minute video, but she went on for 26 minutes. I don't like her. Christian, writing, what's that meme about something like, yeah, I can set a rule for myself, but I know the guy who makes the rules and he's full of crap. Yes. Yes, that is... That's one of the hardest things about being an adult. It's like, wait, you can't tell me what to do. I'm talking to myself, but you can't tell me what to do. There's a whole lot of you can't tell me what to do going on in my head. A lot of the time. Okay, Kimmy, the most useful bullet journal vids I've seen talk about how they learned that they did better to keep things simple. Yes. The author Tobias Bakel has an excellent bullet journal blog post, and he's a friend of mine, but I had to write him a fan letter after that, because being a writer with ADHD, self-employed, like, this was somebody who spoke directly to me as someone with ADHD who's trying to use a bullet journal, and here's how he made it work. And I'm just like, thank you so much. I just wrote him this big long, you really helped me out kind of thing. Felt weird because he is a friend of mine, but I had to say it because it was the best thing I'd seen for what I needed. So that's Tobias Bakel, and he does, it was a blog post, I think. And I think it's a couple of years old, and he told me that he's moved to like a hybrid paper and digital method now. But frankly, that doesn't interest me as much because I'm almost all analog when it comes to brainstorming and list making and planning stuff, which is funny because my handwriting is terrible indeed, but that's how my brain chooses to express itself. Funnily enough, I hate writing books in longhand. Can't stand it. I'm a fast typer. I'm not like secretarial fast, and I'm not classically trained, so there's an awful lot of backspace, but I can backspace very fast as well. And I can't write longhand as fast as I can type, so my brain's just sitting there tapping its foot while I'm trying to write out longhand, thinking, I know what happens in the next paragraph, and if you spend too much more time writing that sentence in a legible fashion, I'm gonna forget it. So I prefer book writing on the computer. But list making, things that don't have a deadline kind of thing, just doodling and brainstorming and all that, that's all analog for me. Under Pope, his method, you mean Tobias's method as well? Billy Boy, hey Billy Boy, focusing on one thing at a time seems to help productivity. Yeah, that whole... I was trying to explain to my father that I'd been diagnosed with adult ADD and what that means. And he's like, but you're so good at multitasking. I'm like, yeah, Dad, that's the bad thing. We're not supposed to multitask. That's where things fall through the cracks. I was washing vegetables while I was talking to him on the phone. So I realized a little bit of hypocrisy there, but I'm pretty sure that like washing vegetables and talking on the phone is different than, say, trying to edit a podcast and write a scene at the same time. A lot of ADHD people shame themselves for being inconsistent and we quit, but if we just remember that we are consistently inconsistent, then the shame goes away and we keep trying. All that matters is we keep trying. That is absolutely true. I'm kind of coming to terms with the fact that a lot of things about ADHD is me trying to not feel shame for what ADHD does to my brain, but I thought was just me being a flake or irresponsible or whatever, all the things. And instead of feeling shame, trying to find workarounds for that is a big step for me right now. I would like to just say, because I see new people in the chat, I am not a doctor. I am not a therapist. I am someone who's dealing with only 1 year long diagnosis of adult ADHD, and I'm trying to deal with it. So anything I say, grain of salt, I am someone who's experiencing it, not a therapist, all that. The dog is angry. Yeah, people are saying the paper thing is a good thing, indeed. Taylor, can I give you a hug? Your comment is so encouraging. Yeah, that was really helpful. Thank you, Taylor. So, other questions in the Discord. Let's see. Oh, that was the productivity Atomic Habits. So those are the other... Oh, favorite craft books. That's easier. Beginnings, Middles, and Ends by Nancy Kress. Victoria Strauss's 45 Master Characters. She also has a 45 archetype... Not 45, but she has a, like, archetypal plots book as well. I have it. It's okay. It's not one that I always go to, and I almost always go to the 45 Master Characters. The best thing about that is, like, if you think, I'm not going to write an archetype, that's a cliche, whatever. She also has examples in media of all these people, and it's neat to see, like, lists of people from very different stories who you would think are kind of different people, but they both fit the archetype, and that's where I find most of my use of the book. The caveat I will say is that the book really does seem to be gender binary and heteronormative. You know, it tells us what happens when the Persephone archetype and the Hades archetype get together. And I'm thinking, what about if the Hades archetype and the Apollo archetype get together? Are you going to tell me about that? So I wish that she explored a little bit more that wasn't so man-woman hetero thing, but it's a good starting point. Let's see. I just found the developmental editor I hired doesn't use track changes function. That struck me as odd is that comment. I have not hired as many editors, but I would think that is uncommon because you have to approve the changes that they make. So if they don't track changes, how are you going to know what they're changing? And that does not sound like a good plan, and I think that's something you need to ask them. And I really hope you have an earlier version of your piece. The thing about Microsoft Word is that it is a large, bloated, many-legged creature. I don't know where I'm going with this. It can do a lot, and I don't know, like, 85% of what it can do. I put it in to regulate the font and regulate the font size and save in a doc format, which my editor prefers. And that's all. But I know it can do more, so I'm asking chat, or I'm asking you guys listening to the podcast if you want to mail in, is there a way to take one version of a Word document and a later version of a Word document and see what the difference is between them? It sounds like something Word could do, but I don't know how you would do it. So if anybody knows, like, a lot of Word wizardry, let me know. But yeah, I think that's something you as the client need to ask for. CopyLeaks will do that, if I recall correctly. Is that an option in, is that a tool or is that an option in Word, or Let's see. My favorite. Oh, it's a website. Okay. Interesting. So, I'm going to. That's cool. Copy leaks, apparently. You upload two files and it will compare them. That is awesome. Thank you. And okay, Cunning, there's a compare function in Word built in. Awesome. Thank you guys so much. I knew people would know this. I don't know it. Oh, now they're saying in the Discord the same thing. Okay, so tips for a pants who has to pre-plot for the first time. I need to put together a synopsis for the second book in my contract, and I've never done that before writing the actual book before. How much detail does it need? How much do we need to know in advance? Thanks. I feel you. I was in the same position with my first deal. I had the first book written, and then they wanted an outline for the second book. I think you need to ask your editor and or agent exactly what they're looking for in a synopsis, because people may think it's a universal word, but it's not. Because a lot of people want different things. You know, do you need to go into like a 8,000 word summary? Do you need to give them a couple of paragraphs? Do you need to just say, it's in the same world as this, only this character is dealing with this, and here's where they end up? So, you know, as in almost everything else in life, it's like, we're often afraid to ask questions because we think it's an answer we should already know, but do not be afraid to ask your editor for exactly what they want. And if you are afraid, then I hope you have an agent that can help you out there. But, yeah, I think, that is the problem with becoming a pro. It's, and if you're a pantser, because the awesome thing is, you don't have to write books on spec anymore. The less awesome thing is, if you're a pantser, you may not know what your next book's about until you start. I had a lot of trouble selling books based on outlines. And, like, I submitted 3 outlines to my editor, and they chose 6 weeks, which, you know, I can finally say I'm far enough away from the book to say that was the one I was least excited about, but that was the one that they jumped on. And so I had to take, and that was like a couple of paragraphs of things just to pitch it. So maybe they just want a couple of paragraphs. So, yeah, ask them what exactly they want. Maybe they'll want like an idea, and then they'll say, yeah, that's good, keep going. And then you can go on and flesh it out. Okay. What is my favorite book to movie adaptation? That is difficult because I've actually found that if there is a book-to-movie adaptation, I will be happier if I watch the movie first and then read the book, because then you have a story and then it's fleshed out. Whereas if you read the book first and then you watch the movie, it's got to be condensed because it's a different medium. That's what people don't really get, unfortunately. Like, we can't see inner monologues in movies. We can, but it's considered kind of amateur and tacky, I believe. I've heard that the voiceover at the end of Blade Runner is a contentious bit with fans, I believe. There's so much that you can say in a book that you can't say in a movie that you have to try to portray via imagery and sound and dialogue and acting, but not specific words. So It is a very different medium, so you have to accept that things are going to be different. I got tired. I'm sorry. I bring it up because, it, like it or not, it is something that most of the past 40, anybody born in the last, like, 50 years is familiar with. The author has made me very angry with some of their stances, and so I don't like bringing it up, but because everybody's familiar with it, I often bring it up in storytelling, so I apologize, but in when Harry Potter started to be going to movies, I got really angry when they took a lot of emotion out of the book and put a lot more time into action with green screen creatures. So that was, that bored me, frankly. I thought there was a lot more they could have done, and instead we just got the fight with a basilisk that took, like, a fifth of the movie. But you asked me my favorite book to movie. Gosh. I'm on the spot and I'm live, so I gotta keep talking. I like the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe cartoon movie. I liked that one. I think Lord of the Rings did a pretty good job of cutting out some of the stuff we didn't need, Tom Bombadil, and leaving in some stuff that was good, that was other people might have cut. I don't know, like, people ask me specifically what book or what movie, and so, like, my brain goes blank. Yeah, there was a cartoon of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I think it was just the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. They didn't do the whole series. I remember very specifically the Aslan dead scene. Crap. I don't know. I'll have to think about it. You know, I'll go and I'll look at my bookcase and think, well, of course, duh. Good Omens was good. Not book to movie, but the TV show was very accurate to the book. They cut out the four other Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and they were some of my favorite characters in the books, but they were bit characters, and I understand why they had to be cut. Yes, the Good Omen show was so good. Okay, Cunning, yeah. It's, I mean, Gaiman was involved in it, so, that. Good Omens was a very influential book to me. It came out, I think I was 17 or 18 at the time, and I picked it up, and it was like that book that I'd already wanted to be a writer. But for some reason, reading it then let me know that humor was okay and weird footnotes were okay. And going into omniscient storytelling for the sake of humor was okay. It's all difficult and you got to be good to pull it off. But having masters show you what's possible in fiction is really, it's eye-opening. It's amazing. And so that was a very awesome book. So I was very happy to see that they were making that with Pratchett's blessing, and Gaiman was heavily involved, which is why it's so awesome. Yeah, I'll go ahead and say Good Omens. I seem to remember liking Stardust, but somehow both the movie and the book are utterly forgettable for me. And that's not a put-down, that's just a fact. There are a lot of books that I liked, but I forgot. Other books just get lodged in my brain, and I'll remember the details forever. Funny thing is, I was collecting Gaiman pretty heavily at the time, and I have so many versions of American Gods and Stardust. I have, like, ARCs and 10th anniversary of Good Omens and... not Good Omens, American Gods. Just so many versions of Stardust. Got the illustrated version of Stardust. I believe Charles Vest did that. Yeah, I got a lot. A lot of collectible Gaiman. Who has been on this show before. Twice. Yeah, I've had him on twice. Last time was like 2009, so... things have changed since then. My best Neil Gaiman story is the fact that I met him for the first time when the day I got laid off from my very first job, my very first like corporate job, and, you know, went from the layoff to go stand in a long line, because at the time he still created long lines. They were just all Sandman fans and a lot of cosplayers and goth girls. And he wrote in my copy of, I think it was American Gods, Tumor, I hope things get better. And they did. So that was awesome. Did not mean to go into a Neil Gaiman tangent here. Is there anything else you guys would like me to address? I'm sorry, I will try to come back with a better book-to-movie thing. I remember I saw The Lightning Thief before I read the book, and so that was one of the things where, oh, that's an okay movie, and then, wow, the book's so much better kind of thing. But, yeah. If anybody here was in my AMA yesterday, I want to apologize and say I felt awkward because my view of fan fiction is... What I'm trying to say about fan fiction, I said that if you're really good at fan fiction, why aren't you writing more? And someone pointed out, well, ADD and anxiety and depression, and it's like, it's a much safer space because... the fan fiction is a community. And they didn't tell me this, but I upon thinking about it, I'm like, fan fiction community. And we were talking specifically about Blazeball, and the Blazeball community is like the most accepting community I've ever seen. It's just amazing. They welcome anybody. And it's... I understand the fact that it's so much easier to have one nugget of the story that's anchored somewhere else, and then you can build something around that. That is a safety thing. That's a comfort thing. And right now, that is gold to us. And I just want to say that a lot of people writing fanfic right now, I just hope that you experience that safe space and get a lot out of it. But sometime in the future, I hope that you feel safe enough to take your awesome ideas and step outside and create something original. And I'm not saying original is better than fanfic. I'm saying you can sell original and build a career on it. Or, as Annie said, you can file off the serial numbers and then sell it as your own. But I just want to say I love fanfic. I love what it does for people. I love the communities it builds. I was not meaning to put anybody down for doing it instead of doing your own stuff, but I'm thinking if you're really good at that, you can make money doing this, and you're a thief if you make money doing fanfic and selling it. So that's my awkward apology if anybody is still around from yesterday's AMA. Which was awesome, by the way. We talked a lot about a variety of things. Blazeball and screenwriting, I believe. Not at the same time. But check in the chat. No one else has asked any more questions. I'll give you guys a couple more minutes just to remind you of my stream schedule. Roughly. Today I was slow moving, as I said. Migraine. And I'll admit it, ADD. Because ADD makes you look at the clock and say, I got plenty of time. And then 12:15, I got plenty of time. And then 12:25, nah, I got plenty of time. And then 12:30, oh, I should probably be up there doing that, huh? Yeah. So, in theory, it's 12:30 Tuesdays and Thursdays, Eastern Time. I have an AMA on Mondays, same time, 12:30. And then I game Thursday nights and Saturday, or Sunday afternoons. Billy Boy, it seems like fanfiction has some copyright liability tied in with it. Am I wrong? I didn't think you put down fanfic yesterday. Thank you. I try to be careful. By law, fanfiction is a crime. It's a copyright crime. It's copyright violation. However, a lot of authors don't mind. And if the author doesn't mind and you're not making money out of it, no one's going to come after you. It's, as an author, I just don't want you selling it and making money off of it. But for me, it's hugely flattering that my world lives on in somebody's mind so much that they need to keep telling stories in it. And that is one of the largest compliments a writer can get. It's, yeah, just the idea that I created something that made other people want to create. That's beautiful. But yeah, it is technically illegal, but very few people go after it. You shouldn't sell things. That's really it. There's a... What is AMA? Oh, sorry, Ask Me Anything. It's just generally a chat. I believe Twitch calls it just chatting. So yeah, I Should Be Writing podcast, try to keep mostly towards writing, but AMA, you can ask me about my books or Star Wars or my podcasts or discuss baseball or something. I don't want to go into politics. I don't want to go into religion. I don't want to go into anything incredibly confrontational, but, you know, I like talking about nerdy stuff. So, yeah, so that's when you can find me on Twitch. I'm still noodling a baseball stream. I'm not sure when I will do it. I'm thinking of starting once a week because I don't want to overwhelm myself. It's not going to be a live thing like the baseball radio guy. It's not going to be like calling the games and talking about them. But it's probably going to be Hades Tigers focused. But hopefully it'll be entertaining and amusing and all that. Entertaining and amusing are often the same thing. Anyway, so, yeah, you can find me at Murverse.com. If you want to support the Patreon, that's patreon.com/mightymur. If you're listening to this on the podcast, you can watch live. I don't know why I'm addressing the microphone now instead of the camera, but I'm talking to the podcast people, so I want to address the microphone. I don't know why. It amuses me. Yes, you can, if you want to catch the next live stream, again, that's 12:30. No, I said the schedule, I want to say the URL, twitch.tv/mightymur. Yeah, and my latest project is the Escape Pod 15th Anniversary Anthology that's coming out October 20th. I was co-editor along with SB Divya, and I wrote a story in it that takes place in the Six Wakes universe, if you want more stories in that universe. It takes place directly is an odd word in a world where clones can just live for a very long time, but it feels to me like it takes place directly after Six Wakes. But you may disagree. Anyway, so yeah, that's my end of the episode shilling. Thank you everybody in chat keeping this going. It's always entertaining and keeps things lively for me. I'm just sorry when you ask me a question that utterly flummoxes me and I can't answer it, and then there's the dead air. But yeah, I hope I'll see you guys on Thursday, same time. And hang in there. You should be writing whatever it is. Vignettes, fan fiction, your own story. Just give it a try. Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymur. I Should Be Writing theme music provided by John Anilio. You can find more about him at johnanilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. But I should